From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's July the 16th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons at the Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, a new report says USDA has difficulty tracking live animals, particularly cattle, from outside of the country. And U.S. and EU farm groups do not like the latest WTO proposals. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many other news stories. And then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen as we finish up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from the Archer Daniels Midland Company, ADM, resourceful by nature. The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby September wheat at $8.34 gained 23 cents, up 23 today. December at $8.57 and a quarter, 22 and a half higher. And July futures for next year at $9.08 and a quarter, up 29 and three quarters. September wheat in Kansas City up 16 and a half cents today at $8.60 and a half. From the corn pit in Chicago, nearby September is traded to settle at $6.58 and a half, up 10 and a quarter. December at $6.77 and a quarter, up 10 and a half. And the March futures at $6.95 and a half, 10 and one quarter higher. May futures for the corn at $7.07 and three quarters for next year, up 10 and a half. And the December 09 contract, $6.57. The settlement price, December corn 2009, up 10 and one quarter cents today. August soybean futures, $15.73. The settlement price, up 31. September, $15.58, up 30. November at $15.48, up 32. And the August bean meal futures at $429.20 settled $7.40 higher. September at $423.70, up $6.90 on the afternoon. August bean oil at $64.09, $106 higher. September's at $64.46, up $106 as well. August live cattle futures a dollar lower at $98.60. And the August lean hogs at $76.57 and a half were up $1.50. Here's what the outside markets look like on the afternoon. August crude oil futures at $134.15, down $4.59 at this hour. September futures at $134.85, down $4.52. The CRB index now stands at $444.98. That's down 5.32 for the afternoon. And the U.S. dollar trading at $72.092. is 0.38 higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,165 is up just about 203 points. And gold futures are trading the nearby July contract at $961.80, down $15.90 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the two-state region. Across Illinois and Indiana tonight in the north, it'll be clear to partly cloudy. Elsewhere, mostly clear. Lows will range from 61 in eastern Indiana to around 75 in downtown Chicago. Tomorrow in northern Illinois, a mix of clouds and some sun. Elsewhere, it'll be sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 90 to 95. Agricultural highlights, weather will continue to favorable to crop development through the two-state area for the next 2 weeks. Mostly dry and warm weather will give way to a few scattered areas of rainfall this weekend and more widespread precipitation early next week. Despite the occasional shower, a few thunderstorms that are expected over the next 10 days to 2 weeks, net drying expected to happen in most locations. The rain should ensure, of course, adequate moisture is available for successful pollination of the corn crop. River basins and some poorly drained fields may experience minor flooding, says our own Mike Sola, in the event of locally heavy rainfall. Through the end of the month, that any flooding expected to be minor and should have little impact on transportation issues or, in fact, yield potential. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Urbana-Champaign.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined on a Wednesday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural futures markets by Paul Cooley of Adium Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the trade in Chicago, and maybe you could start with the crude oil futures down $4.60 at this hour.
Well, let's go to yesterday's close and trade in the crude oil. We understand in 10 minutes, 20,000 contracts of crude oil traded, and one person mentioned Bernanke's testimony basically saying crude oil demand has dropped in the world some. Then there was a story that the Securities and Exchange Commission were basically looking into trading of oil and profits and trading a structure there. And as a result of that, there was a mass exodus out of crude oil. The Securities and Exchange Commission is probably the, you know, in the securities industry, like calling the FBI in. So it was pretty high level, and it did create a scare. Now, this morning, the inventory report showed an increase in crude oil inventory, and as a result of that, we saw another sharp sell-off in crude oil and energy stocks. Overnight, the commodity world and the financial world continues to be shaken with the basic concept of of an economic slowdown, not only in the U.S. but worldwide, and also very concerned about you know, we are looking at some very good growing conditions. My crack meteorologist that I have the most confidence in basically said, you know, a pretty good rain starting of next week, and another good rain coming in on the 24th and 7th. And if you go on out with some binoculars, you can see that the August crop report is and probably will be pretty good. And as a result of that, the market was rather reluctant to do any buying until about the middle part of the day, and then we did see a turnaround, a very dynamic turnaround. Of course, soybeans led the parade, and then wheat and corn came in last. But as a general rule, it was oversold. Probably there was export buying as well as short covering. There's a lot of momentum traders. If it goes down, sell it, and if it turns around, they buy it, and there was very little for sale, and the market closed probably with a triple hit today, closing pretty strong, close to the higher levels of the day.
Given normal weather conditions from now until harvest, what size crop do you think the U.S. will have? And I know the difficult thing may not be getting the yield right, but rather getting the acreage forecast correct.
Well, you know, we do know from past years with the crop ratings the way they are, it would equate to probably 151 or 2 bushels per acre. You know, I would leave the normal weather and this new genetic technology we have, and, you know, we could have somewhere in that 151 to 159 bushels to the acre yield. And I think it's you know, possible. Is the market trading that large a crop today? No, it's not. But at least the crop conditions report is saying, as far as the acreage is concerned, the government's probably closer to right with their numbers than not right now.
So the 151, would that put us at what, a 12 billion bushel crop on the government harvested acreage? Is that right?
Well, very close.
Very close to a 12 billion, and those are some of the numbers that Daryl Good and the Farm Doc team are working with on a report that they just released as well. Although they've got a couple of other series of numbers, have you taken a look at that report that came out this week?
Yeah, it was mentioned in several of the market comments this morning.
Okay, and so I sent that out to our newsletter subscribers along with about a 10-minute interview that I did with Daryl this morning, just before this program. So when you get to your email tonight, it should be there, and you'll be able to click on that and listen to what Daryl has to say about that program. We'll try to air some of that interview tomorrow on this program as well on a Thursday with Daryl Good. But if you've subscribed to the newsletter or you subscribe in the next 6-7 hours, I'll send it out to you. So let's talk more about if you're looking at a 12 billion bushel crop, you suggested that the market's not trading that at this point. Is there that much downside potential? Or?
Well, I think that you could see somewhere in that, if we are trading, you know, that a bigger number like in that 152 bushel crop, the informer people said somewhere in the $5.50 to $6 mark as far as price levels concerned. So we are trading, we have a little fluff in the market if that 152 bushel corn yield would come into play. You know, there's tremendous issues in here. One, of course, is inflation. And basically, you know, we're waiting patiently for the CRP measures to come in. But with this crop of corn and the weather forecast to August 1st, I think the, you know, some of the parameters of saying that we're going to have $8 corn, I think we're going to slowly put those to rest. But now August is an important month,
right?
And we have to kind of play with that. But that's, you know, some of the things we're looking at. The carryover is over 1.5 by government figures. And this should encourage, with these lower prices, to get some of those ethanol plants going, get some of our exports moving, and actually improve the financial conditions of our livestock industry a great deal.
And can we raise the 3 billion bushel soybean crop?
Well, good question. My hunch is that soybeans, August weather still determine a lot there. We are getting complaints out in the countryside about spraying beans maybe twice, three times. There's added expense there. The weeds are just growing marvelously out there. Whatever they're doing out there, it's growing well and fast. And we think they'll get that under control. Mm-hmm. That's a side joke, but it's an expensive side joke. And everybody, that's one of the topics when I talk to the country elevators today, is in the office talk circle about weed control and soybeans is one of the top conversations in the Midwest as of today.
Yeah, it's sort of tough to remember at this time of year that August is the soybean month and July is the corn month because the corn.
A company basically said, you know, we do have to have a lot of frost-free days after October 1st to add yield too.
Indeed, we do. Thanks much, and
have a nice day.
Mm-hmm, that's Paul Cooley with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Paul joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what he had to say again, you can do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can pick up this program as a podcast, or you can just simply listen to it directly off the website. It streams in as an MP3 file, and if you really want to, and you're traveling, you can always listen to this program at its 2:06 time frame live on our website at willag.org. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us through the ag news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, a new Inspector General's report says USDA has problems enforcing restrictions on imported livestock and does not track cattle allowed into the country under limited conditions. The report says that investigators found that banned cattle had entered the U.S. from Canada without any inspection from APHIS. And once the animals crossed the border, there was no way to track whether if cattle went to the proper destination or were slaughtered at the right time due to their age. The OIG audit comes after a federal judge earlier this month ruled that USA did not use proper procedures when creating a new rule allowing older Canadian cattle into the country. Both U.S. and European farm groups blasted proposed language in WTO World Trade Talks that they say would give away too much in government programs. Lawmakers are also concerned, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley.
If the Secretary General of WTO puts something on the table, personally gets involved, you could see things moving quickly that maybe would be detrimental or maybe cause the United States, if Ambassador Schwab sticks by her position and what he puts on the table might not be favorable or can't be improved in the process, then we would have to object, and we could object. But when Mr. Lemieux gets involved personally with a package he's put on the table, then that's what could put us in a precarious position.
13 major U.S. farm groups wrote President George Bush saying they are, quote, alarmed that negotiations may sacrifice U.S. agriculture to gain access for manufactured goods and services at the Doha round of world meetings. France's agriculture minister says he hopes to broker a deal on reforming the European Union's farm support system in November. France now holds the EU's rotating presidency. Currently, the common agriculture policy eats up about 40% of the European Union budget. Until now, France, the bloc's biggest farm subsidy beneficiary, has been reluctant to overhaul the policy. U.S. bone-in cuts of beef are expected to arrive today in South Korea for the first time in 5 years. Sources say it will take about 15 days for the shipment to clear customs and quarantine inspections. And the U.S. EPA yesterday proposed first-ever rules for the long-term storage of carbon dioxide deep underground. EPA officials say the rule paves the way for technology that could help reduce the effects of CO2 gas on the climate. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm the host of the Closing Market Report, University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Now, up next, you know the U.S. government is getting a lot of pressure to do something about speculation in the commodity markets. Grains and oil seeds traded in Chicago, Kansas City, and Minneapolis, and crude oil traded in New York. It's not a new call, and as we'll hear in this report, it's one that can only be settled by looking at both sides of the trade. Agricultural economists at the University of Illinois have released a report titled The Adequacy of Speculation in Agricultural Futures Markets, Too Much of a Good Thing. You can find it on the FarmDoc website at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. The U of I professors argue the only way to determine if speculators are having an excessive impact on a market is to look at the number of positions hedgers are demanding. A hedger, narrowly defined, is someone or some institution, say a grain elevator, that has possession of the underlying commodity. For example, a farmer actually has corn and is considered a hedger when taking a short position, a selling, on the futures markets. Certainly, says one of the ag economists, Scott Irwin, the paper does not take up a new issue in the marketplace.
The questions about the impact of speculation have swirled around our commodity futures markets really, literally from their first day that they started trading. There were actually efforts in the 1880s to outright ban trading at the Chicago Board of Trade due to the argument that they were simply, you know, gambling dens that didn't have any connection to the real physical markets and were damaging the markets. And we've seen successive waves of basically exactly the same questions arise again and again. Typically, anytime there's a really sharp run-up in prices and someone who's short and is feeling a lot of pain, will then try to blame speculators.
The speculators in question this time around are the index funds. Their entrance into the marketplace is recent, and it's very large. About 95% of the funds are long only, or always buying the commodity, which could arguably drive prices artificially higher. Irwin says the data shows these funds today typically comprise between 25 and 60% of the long side of the agricultural markets being played.
If you use, for example, the corn market as an example, since 2006, the index funds and the long speculative side of the market has grown about 50%. You know, it's a big increase. We're talking about almost 250,000 contracts that speculators are holding long, more than they did 2 years ago. I mean, that's a huge number by historical standards in our grain markets. But what's interesting is that the positions of hedgers that are long, their net growth is even larger than on the spec long side. And then, of course, because the market has to balance, there's only four possible positions. What's, I think, an equally interesting story is the growth in the short positions of large hedgers.
Irwin says the numbers tell him the large hedgers have absorbed all of the long speculative increase and all of the long hedging increase. He says at the time of the study, large commercial hedgers were nearly 6 billion bushels short the corn market.
So we put it this way, well, you know, who's doing all the selling is just as interesting of a question as who's doing all the buying.
Certainly an interesting question, but not one taken up in the Illinois research paper. It concludes, among other reasons, because the short hedge positions are greater than the long speculative positions, the long-only index funds are not having an undue impact on the agricultural commodity markets. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Time to take a look at the cash grain market. Ken Smith of the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, joins us this afternoon. Hi, Ken.
Don, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. How's the basis holding up in the face of the gyrations over the last several days?
You know, I would say things look fairly firm. You know, many producers have a lot of their inventories cleaned out. So we really, here in the last week to 10 days, we have not seen a lot of movement, especially with the downward movement in the market. So basis is firming up, trying to find some bushels out there. So in general, I'd say think basis levels feel fairly firm here in the last 10 days.
You at the ethanol plant feeling a little relief with the drop in the market
price? You know, certainly if you look at our margin, you know, with corn being down, it has gone down more so than what ethanol has. So that's good for an ethanol producer. We don't necessarily like to see, you know, the volatility or necessarily a downward market. But, you know, in this particular time, it has benefited us.
How's the corn crop look in your area?
You know, in the Slocum Sport, Indiana area, we've been very fortunate. We have not got the rain that we have, that you probably have over in that Champaign area. Crop looks relatively good. Several fields south of us are showing tassel and pollinating. We've got fairly good moisture. So really feel fairly good. You know, obviously temps are maybe a little warmer than ideal, but you know, really feel pretty good about pollination weather here.
Soybeans look okay yet?
Yeah, soybeans certainly with the cold spring. We got off to, you know, maybe a slower start in soybeans. But, so, you know, I have learned it's hard to judge a soybean crop in July. But generally soybeans, I think, look okay in our area.
And your bids for the day?
Bids for tonight. The basis here at Climbers, we are at 42 under. August, we are 30 under, and at Delphi, we are 42 under and 40 under. Soybean basis at Delphi, we are 5 under the August. And wheat bid, we are seeing quite a bit of wheat harvest right at the moment. Most guys are getting that wrapped up and really think...
It's National Corn Fritters Day. A fritter is any kind of food coated in batter and deep fried. The origins of the corn fritter are murky at best. The Boston Cooking School Cookbook of 1918 had a recipe for corn fritters. On this day in agricultural history, in 1704, John Kay was born. An English machinist and engineer, he invented the flying shuttle power loom, which was an important step toward automatic weaving. But at first, his invention was not appreciated by weavers, who thought it would steal their jobs. Ultimately, he was forced to flee from England to France. In 1907, Orville Redenbacher was born. An American agronomist, Redenbacher founded the gourmet popcorn business. In the 1940s, he and a friend, Charles Bowman, experimented with corn hybrids from Purdue University, the forerunner, decades later, of gourmet popcorn. By the way, Redenbacher once appeared on To Tell the Truth, where he stumped the panel. And in 2004, the city manager of Key West, Florida, fired its official chicken catcher. Armando Pera was hired to catch and relocate some of the more than 2,000 wild chickens that roam this small city island. But Key West city fathers did not feel he would meet his contract quota to relocate 1,000 chickens by September. And so Pera was given the axe. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Urbana-Champaign. Time to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City joins us this afternoon. Hi, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather in the Midwest.
Well, we're in a little bit of a temporary pause in the old wet weather bias that we've had for quite a while. The Eastern Corn Belt is likely to see basically very little precipitation now, taking us all the way into the end of the work week. The exception will be maybe in northern Illinois over to Michigan, where there is still an opportunity for some rain and thunderstorms towards the end of the work week. And during the weekend itself, we'll start seeing scattered storms occur a little bit more often as we go from the central and northern parts of Illinois into Michigan again. But southern Ohio, southeastern portions of Indiana and Kentucky will probably be rain-free until we get to the first part of next week. Then it does look like shower and thunderstorm activity will occur across most of the eastern Midwest during the first half of next week. In the meantime, it's going to rain quite a bit in the western Corn Belt. This is probably going to occur from now all the way through the weekend. Most areas in the western Corn Belt will get rain at one time or another, and it does look as though some heavy amounts will occur from portions of eastern Nebraska into Wisconsin, including a large part of Iowa. Today's midday computer forecast model data came out and suggested a ridge of high pressure, a rather significant one at that, was going to be over the northwestern Corn Belt in the last days of July. Just wanted to rest everybody assured here that we're not going to see that ridge verify, at least not in the position that it was at midday today. I know the market was pretty interested in it. The ridge is going to develop in the plains and some of the western fringes of the Corn Belt in those last days of July, but it won't be anywhere near as intense as that which was suggested at midday today.
Yeah, so if they get this heavy rainfall, how saturated do their soils remain at this point, and how much of a problem might that be?
Well, certainly the area from Nebraska into parts of Michigan and Wisconsin will be still very wet going into this next week to 10-day period. I don't think it's all that significant, though, except for the fact that we still are going to have some lowland flooding or water still sitting in some fields out there. But with temperatures running in the 80s and lower 90s on a regular basis over the next 10 days, this moisture will be lost fairly quickly. We've gotten away from that persistent cool weather bias, so this moisture should evaporate rather quickly. And I do think that the crops will end up responding relatively well. Now, that's the only band in the Midwest that will see that kind of rainfall. I think most other areas will see just lighter amounts. And the bottom line is net drying will likely occur in the second week of the two-week outlook.
Daytime temperatures not too bad for corn development and pollination, but we would like cooler evening temperatures. Are those in the forecast as well?
For a short period of time, yes, and we get into the late weekend, early part of next week, we'll have a little bit of drier air coming in temporarily that will lower those nighttime temperatures. But as we get into the second week of the two-week outlook, or in other words, when we finish out the month of July, we'll be back into the heat again. Most areas will be rather warm with a lot of upper 80 and lower to a few middle 90-degree readings expected with even warmer conditions west of the Missouri River, and the nighttime lows then will be fairly balmy as well.
Okay. Anything else that we should add before I let you go for the afternoon?
Just that the Delta is going to be very dry for a while, too, and crop stress is likely to be pretty significant down there, so we'll keep an eye on crop yields in that part of the country.
Thanks much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on the Closing Market Report. Happens on a Wednesday afternoon. You have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois.